Welcome to Mission Critical, a podcast about the big picture, the purpose, and the values that drive today's most game-changing companies, entrepreneurs, and leaders. I'm your host, Lance Chung, Editor-in-Chief of Glory Media, and I'll be introducing you to a group of brilliant minds who are making an impact on the world and forging the path ahead. While they may all be very different from each other, the question remains the same. What's your mission?
Hi, Sasha. It's so nice to meet you. How are you?
Wonderful. I'm doing really well.
I love your room. It's so beautiful and it looks so peaceful.
It's like my little box. It's my office box up here in Vancouver.
Oh, I love that. Where in Vancouver are you? I go out there quite often with some. I have family in Port Moody.
Oh, nice. I'm on the North Shore. I'm over on the North Shore. So right, like just behind, or I guess in front of Cypress Mountain.
There's something about being near the ocean and being in Vancouver specifically that I find to be immediately like brings down my blood pressure, I guess, compared to like being in Toronto, at least. It's such a beautiful landscape and environment to be in, especially I imagine as like an entrepreneur and building up a business.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think it's, we moved back from California a couple of years ago. Bit of a shocker being down there for like 14 years. But it's really beautiful. I mean, in California, everything was more condensed and I was living in a small town there. Whereas here it is more spread out and it's huge. It's like a big little country here, but we can be in Whistler in 1 hour, which is like, you'd have to drive 8 hours if you wanted to get to the snow in California. You could actually be the mountains up here in 30 minutes if you really wanted to. So yeah, I'm really like, part of me wonders if we'll go back south, but some days when I'm walking outside, the fresh air is just really, it's like, I feel like there's nothing cleaner really in the world. It's just so fresh, so crisp, until it starts raining. And then I really wonder if we'll go back south.
Yeah. Fair enough. Well, I'm so excited to be chatting with you today. I've been following your brand journey and the brand for a while and been admiring from afar. And a lot of my friends that are big fans of, or big, you know, beauty enthusiasts are big fans of your brand as well. So very, very excited to chat. I wanted to start off by talking about just like what your first interactions or memories of like, of beauty and also like what it meant to feel beautiful and how you define that for yourself. Is there a specific kind of moment that comes to mind, or has that been more of like a gradual evolution for yourself?
Yeah. I mean, like, I think, it's definitely been an evolution. And as far as experiencing and remembering beauty, I remember my mom, I would say, a lot in that regard. I don't think that's an uncommon memory for those that grew up with their mom. And for me, my mom, she was beautiful. She is beautiful. And she had, it was little things. Like, I remember her perfectly manicured red nails on the Saab stick shift with her dangling golden bracelets. And my other friends remember that too, actually. Like, they've talked about it in the past. And the way that she'd just kind of casually throw on a little bit of eyeliner and a lip and pull her hair up into like a kind of like a French bun, and very kind of chic, but understated, classic. And I remember also being probably under 4 feet tall and rummaging through her drawers, you know, of which I think my first application of a lipstick was from Clinique.
Yes. It's so interesting that a lot of those formative moments when we think about beauty are around kind of our maternal figures, whether they're mothers or grandmothers, or even like cousins and sisters too. But I kind of still also remember, even for myself, like also my mom, and also like the perfume she would use, and then also my aunties, because we were very like maternal kind of like a cluster of family members that were very close, and just being surrounded by that. And so it's so beautiful to, you know, so to speak, to hear that you have like a very specific memory that even your friends remember, and that's so vibrant. And I imagine kind of brings you back to a time where that, I guess, that concept of beauty was first instilled. And now fast forward, you are a beauty entrepreneur and owner of a brand as well. what inspired you to really set yourself on this journey of beauty and building up your business and eventually launching your brand?
Yeah, I think I always was probably a seeker or somebody with a lot of curiosity, and I was seeking something. I wouldn't say I was seeking to be an entrepreneur. I was seeking to create and design. And I actually had two failed businesses. They weren't actually businesses. They were just ideas before this. And my background was in design. I worked, it's funny, I had a conversation with somebody today because she has having wrist problems. I used to do a lot of design and branding, and I ended up getting carpal tunnel and had to take a break from work. And I was saying, you should go soak in Epsom salt baths at night, like pour like the whole bag in and soak your wrists inside to see if you can avoid the surgery. And yeah, there was a whole, like, I was reminded there was a whole life that was kind of pre-beauty. But while I was doing all these different design jobs, and I worked in branding, I did work with Urban Decay Cosmetics briefly in the US. I was very inspired, I think, being in the US and seeing what people do, in the sense that there really is, and this was even like, I think in Canada, it's more possible, there's more possibility today to think that way, but it's not in our social structure up here to think in a very entrepreneurial way. Whereas in the US, there's the American dream, you can come from anywhere and make something yourself. And truly, like, that's really the experience that I guess I was going after without even really realizing it. So, I mean, the start of it was not down. Well, I guess the start of it was down there, because if I didn't break up with the boyfriend I was with for 9 years and move back to Vancouver, maybe it wouldn't have started. But I did do that after working and trialing out a few different business ideas. One was a silk scarf one in Bali that I think I have a post on my Instagram. They are horrible. They're so ugly. It's like, what was I thinking? But sometimes you just have to explore ideas, right?
Truly.
But that was one. And there was another one, a felt wool coat. It's a cool idea, but I just, the sourcing the wool and all this stuff, there was a lot going on. So came home. It was 2009. I was very deflated. I think I just turned 30. I'd been all around the world, hadn't really been home in 12 years, left when I was 18. And I think it was like a humbling moment to return home with nothing and move into the studio suite next to my parents' garage and take a beat, of which, like, luckily I could come home. I had a place to come home to and take a beat. And, it was there that, I started thinking about beauty, because my skin was suffering so much. And my mom was really in my face, you know, like, I'm like, hey, I'm not 18 anymore, but she would talk to me like I still was, like, you got to look at what you're putting on your skin. You're breaking out because you're not paying attention to the products. They're aggravating your skin. Something's going on. You need to look into it further. So that was really the prompt to look into it further. And that was, I think, the first moment of what am I putting on my skin that prompted it.
And so along your journey, because you have a massively successful company today, and that was rooted in very, like, kind of humble roots as well, just from your story, listening to your story. What would you say, like, did you have, when you launched your company and were setting the foundation for it, did you have a North Star for yourself that you ultimately wanted to accomplish? Or was it just take it day by day, figure it out as you go, and iterate, and then eventually that kind of perspective and goal system was created for you?
I'd say it's a little bit of both. I mean, initially, when I started looking at all beauty products, I realized a lot of the marketing claims didn't necessarily line up with what was happening on your skin. And so I wanted to debunk that. And complexion actually is a scary category. It's one of the hardest. And makeup, it's very challenging because you need to have a wide shade range, which can be really costly. And in order to do it, if you want to do it, you should do it right and wait to be able to provide a wide shade range.
And we've seen lots of headlines of brands that have not done it so well or approached it with enough, you know, thoughtfulness as well, right?
Yeah, no, and it honestly could be a cash situation, because I think people don't realize the investment that has to go into it, the display, everything. Like, it's it's a lot. But aside from that, I started with lip. I think a lot of people in the past have started with lip. I look at people like Bobby Brown, Francois Nars, Tom Ford, all of them started with lip. And I thought lip is easy. I love lip. I wanted to do something in between a lipstick and a lip balm. And it was really a project. So I worked actually rebranding. I can say this up here because people know, but I rebranded Sage Natural Wellness. I came in, there was only like 10 people in this little office that we shared with another architecture firm in Vancouver. And that was my specialty. So I was helping them for a year while I was working on Ilya at night. And I don't know, like, I think I just kept going, to be honest. I did write down goals after I picked, like, it took 2 years to do a formula. It took a year to source the packaging, figure it out, draw the logo. Luckily, because I had a branding background, that really helped me. But it was really like a school project. That's kind of how you explore a brief. And when I went to school, and you would just kind of go through the motions of getting to a final item. And yeah, it was like the final masterpiece at the end and hoping that other people would like it. It was a small investment. The whole thing was started with 25K. It's not 2009 anymore. So I probably can't do that. But from there, I wrote down goals. I'm trying to think if I have that book. I'm looking behind it. I did find a book that has my goals that I had the first year, how many units I wanted to move through, which key boutique retailers I wanted. And it's really funny. You know, I went and looked at them a few years ago and I did hit those goals. So
what is that like looking back on that now at where you're at?
There is a stat out there that you are 10 times more likely to hit a goal if you write it down. And really, like, when you're writing it down, it's like you are really consciously there with those words and those letters, writing it and into paper. And there is something different. There's a different type of connection with your brain and your body when you're doing that. And I truly believe in it. I'm trying to teach my kids that. It doesn't mean that you have to hit it, but when you set when you really put an intention into that, it's much different than just typing something and trying to make it happen. So yeah,
you're embarking on that journey to manifest it.
Yeah. I guess that's what it is. It's like some manifestation, right? So I think I was very, I've been told I'm very resilient, and I do think being resilient in this type of an industry or any type of a business that you're running is important in order to keep moving forward.
Yeah. Today, what would you say, if you could summarize your brand into like an elevator pitch, what would you say is like at the core ethos of what Ilya is and stands for, and how it is it differentiates itself from a very busy marketplace as well?
Absolutely. I think if I want to say it in just a few words, that isn't a marketing slogan or a pitch, it's makeup that makes your skin better. I would say like that's probably, if somebody were to say, what do? I make makeup that makes your skin better. And I think that's really like at the core of who we are. When I did launch, I did my first little website with someone. It was so bad. I think my dad even encouraged me to have like a picture on the bottom with a quote. And it said, I want to be new and disrupt the beauty industry. You know, with like, it wasn't clean at that time, with like innovative natural formulas that are going to make your skin look and feel alive. And that look and feel alive piece, I think, was really like an important part of the comfort of the makeup. And I think overall, I don't know, there was nothing that was really niche at that time. It was either bigger brands, there was either a lot of organic. There was nothing really speaking to, I'd say, my type of demographic, which was maybe back then the Barney's Co-op demographic, if I can reference to that. So yeah, I think overall as a brand, we are known to be clean, skin-centric beauty. We have a slogan that says skincare powered makeup, but ultimately our job is to create amazing products. A lot of them have a hybrid capability. So one of our best sellers is our Super Serum Skin Tint. It's makeup, SPF, and skincare all in one. It is considered to be the original skin tint. We launched it in 2020. Sephora was unsure about launching it at the time because they hadn't really seen anything like it. It was a different texture. There were lots of things around it that made them nervous, which ultimately made us nervous because we But in my heart, I was like, I know that this is going to be good for their skin. And what happened is it started changing people's skin, people who had acne or rosacea. There's actually allantoin in there at an active level, which is an anti-inflammatory FDA-approved ingredient for the skin and even eczema. So it really, the thoughtfulness into the products and the clinicals that we put behind it, we've been doing that for quite a long time. I would say there's a lot of brands around us that are doing something more similar today, but we are ahead of them because I think we were able to get in first. We were able to really build great customer loyalty. And I would say that customers probably know us and trust us more for our product than many of our competitors out there. We may not be as kind of razzle dazzle as a brand. I would say we're very simple, pragmatic, straightforward, but people trust and love our products. And that's what really what we've built our cornerstone off of.
Well, even for me, when I was taking a look at the brand and, you know, we were able to get a hold of some of the product just to look at the packaging. And, you know, it is such a noisy world out there on our screens, but in person when we're going shopping. And I think being simple and effective and pragmatic and just maybe not singular in focus, but kind of not trying to be everything for everyone actually cuts through really quickly because there is so much noise and packaging and messaging that's trying to clamor for everyone's attention. And, you know, I am a proponent of doing things or people that do things and brands and whether it's a restaurant or a beauty brand that does something simple, but does it like really, really, really well, you know? And that's when you like look at a menu at a restaurant, you're like, okay, I can tell that this restaurant has like 5 to 10 dishes, but they probably do them really well, as opposed to getting a binder and you're like, oh my God, there's so many things. How can they possibly do everything so well, you know? So I think that speaks so truly to, you know, how people engage and interact with your brand is that it is so purposeful in its mission to help its end user at the end of the day.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's funny, I was coming back from New York. This one of my favorite little stories over the last while. It was 2 weeks ago. And flying from New York to Vancouver, lots of people are always flying to come to the cruises at that time of year because Vancouver is such a big cruise port in North America. And I was sitting next to a lovely lady. She was 80, beautiful. She didn't look like a day over 65. And she was totally natural, originally from Staten Island, but lived in Stuart, Florida. Like all her family lives down there, her kids. She was going with her friends from high school on this cruise. Anyways, we were talking. I'm like, she's such a nice lady, you know? And then she asked me what I do. I'm like, oh, I work for a corporation. What industry? I kind of like to sometimes say a little less when I'm sitting next to someone. And then eventually she asked the name and she said, get out. I have your foundation in my bag, you know, and she leaned forward and pulled it out. And she said, my daughter told me about it. And it's the best one out there because it has the hyaluronic acid. And she was like selling it to me in a moment. And she said, it's fixed my daughter's skin. And she told me it was going to fix mine. And it was really like, to me, if somebody were to ask me like, what is the essence of Ilia? And it is a brand to me, a multi-generational brand that is truly changing people's skin and that people are really enjoying. And I think it's like, it was in that moment, I was like, this is it. Here I am sitting next to this stranger. She's got, you know, my product in her bag and she's selling it back to me. And like, that's, the circle's complete, so to speak. It was just really, and she was so sweet. I gave her a ride to her hotel. Her name's Marianne from Stuart, Florida. And my goodness, we just opened an Ulta up down there and she will be a customer for life. So very excited for Mary.
I love that. You know, when it comes to the beauty industry and also in a lot of ways, like the fashion industry and some other sectors, you know, the word like clean and natural and sustainable, like they're very like large and in many ways kind of like nebulous terms, right? And there's not really an easy way to exactly define. And a lot of brands define it in different ways too. How would you define yourselves through the lens of like a clean or sustainable brand?
Yeah, well, you're totally right. There is no true kind of regulated definition of clean beauty. And I think it kind of, in some ways, is an unfortunate word because the opposite meaning of clean is not great. And it doesn't mean that because you're not clean, you're not a good brand. I really just want to say that. Like, I think, it's there is greenwashing that comes with the word clean beauty.
Yeah.
And ultimately, I would say for us, we really look at it that, and in Europe, to go just one step further for a moment, clean over there, they think that's natural. And that is not. They think it's natural. They think it's organic. So different countries will have different perspectives on it. But we at Lilia believe not every natural ingredient is good for the skin, nor is every synthetic bad. It usually takes a combination of both to really reach and perfect and get to a goal of an amazing formula. And that's truly how we look at it. I would say we actually, I'm pro working with items made in labs. It is more sustainable than having to go out and harvest and get the crops, especially as you start growing. I actually used to have a lot of products that had more organic ingredients. It was not sustainable. Mm. And if the crop was bad, you wouldn't get a shipment. And like, then we required to have more and more and more. And that's like taxing actually on agriculture in some ways. So yeah, I do think that clean beauty to me, it can actually even be all synthetic. Synthetic doesn't necessarily mean it's bad. It can be done very safely in a lab. We do usually look to include for ingredients a base that is very neutralizing to the skin. So we look to work with something that's pH balanced. It depends on the purpose of the product. Is it providing hydration? Is it providing more kind of pore filling and blurring? It kind of depends, I would say, overall, though a lot of our products will offer hydration. Mm-hmm. And then we look to include active ingredients that have had clinicals done on them to provide firming, smoothing, plumping, reduction of fine lines over a 28-day period. But depending on what it is, you take all of that, and then we go and run clinical trials on it all and make sure that we can get the clinicals and the claims that we're going after. So I think...
Yeah.
Ilya's standpoint, clean is kind of more, I would prefer the word thoughtful. It's thoughtful beauty. Many of the brands in that category, not all today, but many in the beginning, were definitely looking to bring a thoughtful approach to beauty that really unmasked what was going on in the product and make create a relationship with the customer whereby you're building trust one product at a time.
Yeah, yeah. And now, I mean, it is true. Now there is kind of this misconception around what clean beauty means. And just because there's a synthetic ingredient, it doesn't mean that it's bad for you. And conversely, just because there's natural ingredients, it doesn't mean that it's going to be good for you either. Like there are a lot of natural ingredients that could also be harmful, you know?
Yeah, people really, you know what? I was listening to a podcast the other day and it bugged me because there was somebody on there, she has a cleaning product company, and she's saying that the lowest ingredient, if it's considered toxic on EWG and it's above a 3, don't get it. And that's absolutely not true. Like I think the formulas, the ingredients, how they're put together, I think there's a lot of fear mongering out there that is really unfortunate. And it's why I generally don't like to go into that space. And
yeah,
I truthfully don't always know what is in other people's products. And it's why I trust the ones that we build. But ultimately, science is important. Stability is important of a product. The compatibility of how it interacts in the packaging. All of this, as you become a larger brand, is so critical because there's so many regulations in beauty. And I do think that it's really important that people remember that preservatives are needed. There's much more I could kind of say on the subject, but ultimately, like, you can do your research, but you have to trust the science behind it as well.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it makes total sense. Now I was reading in my research that you are also surrounded by, I would say a disproportionate amount of high performance athletes in your life as well. Have you, just by like with your brother and your husband, like have you noticed or extracted kind of anything from the world of sport that you've applied to your own business or life as an entrepreneur in terms of, you know, performance or discipline? Like has any of that world kind of inspired you or reflected on how you might also run your business and life as an entrepreneur?
Oh, absolutely. I think, in the January, we have a product that will be more in relation to sport, or I would say weathering the elements, so to speak. And that's kind of nice to be able to work with some athletes and test it. But in relation to like the mindset of an athlete, I absolutely think that the way I was raised and who I was raised by, and then some of the sports that I partook in my life obviously attracted certain people in my life. And it definitely, I mean, you know, you are programmed, I think, by things in your childhood. It's scary having kids now because I'm like, oh man, that's going to screw up. I know that's going to be like a core memory of trauma. When she's 20 years old, she's going to come running to me and tell me, you remember that time? You know, but there is there, you know, we have these incidents when we're younger that program us. And I was raised by a Serbian father who immigrated to Canada in 1951. He went through World War II in 1930. I mean, the horrors that I will not talk about that happened there are similar to many of the horrors we see in HD today. Mm-hmm. They've always existed in society and humankind since the beginning of time. But that he was so resilient in coming to a country that he could do so much in, because he was so limited living in a communist country. And I think that type of, he's like, he always said to me, you can do anything you want to do. You can be anything you want to be, but it takes a lot of hard work. And he was a world champion water polo player. And everything he did, he kind of did to the fullest, you know. And one of our core values at our company, we have several, but one of them is boundless. And I really think that I want people to be able to know, my kids, people in Canada too, like, because there's such brilliant, intelligent people up here. Like, we got to be boundless in our thinking. You know, if you feel like you want to make a change, you got to be progressive. You got to push. You got to kind of go break the ceiling, so to speak. And I think that that was very much impregnated in my mind from a young age.
Yeah, because in many ways, a lot of the limits that we have on ourselves are the ones that we place on ourselves.
Yes.
I think also that is very much a part of the Canadian identity that I think is changing a little bit. Awesome. You know, we've seen a lot of really great success stories come out of Canada, and also seen success stories that haven't necessarily had to like leave Canada as well. Like there, and the mindset around that is slowly evolving, but it is, I do think it is very much ingrained in our DNA to kind of downplay our successes, or maybe not think as grand as we could be, and be as boundless as we could be.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and then in the US on the flip side, I mean, like the individualistic type of mindset down there, like it's like their greatest asset and probably their biggest enemy, you know, to what's happening down there at this time. And I think it's like every country has their pros and cons. But yeah, I would say in Canada, speak up. You know, even with my kid, she's American. She came here when she was almost 7. And she said, sometimes people are so quiet and I can see them thinking something, but I want them to say it. I'm like, well, just encourage them to open up, you know, and find ways to connect. And I think Toronto, you guys are honestly maybe a little more out there like that. Vancouver is slightly more closed off, and it could even just be the weather, to like be super frank. But yeah, I think connection is so important, you know, in any society.
Yeah, absolutely. Last two questions. What excites you most about the future of beauty and like the road ahead, and not just necessarily in like through the lens of innovation, but also just the discourse around what it means to be beautiful and what kind of conversations we're having in that arena?
I would say, I mean, for me personally in beauty, I think the way you look and you feel is up to each individual. You know, if somebody wants to go and do whatever it is they want to do to themselves, that's their choice, right? And I think like whatever you do to make yourself feel beautiful, if like for me, it's actually trying to exercise 3-4 days a week. I feel physically better. I feel fat better when I'm putting on product. I think I may not look different even in that day, but I know that I feel better for it, and it makes me feel more beautiful kind of from the inside out. I would say in the industry, I think it is crowded, but I do think that there's a lot of innovation that's going to come forward in packaging in ways that we haven't seen in the past several years and we've kind of been waiting for. Those are some things that excite me the most about how this industry can change, because it has to. It is definitely one of the biggest polluters in the world. Sustainability, recyclability, all that stuff. If we can't find an alternative to plastic, we have a big problem. So I am actually, you know, confidentially speaking to some groups out there who have some very innovative materials. And it will take a little time, but I'm really excited to see what's going to happen in the next several years. I actually think like Stanford just built a whole sustainability wing. They have a whole new building, I believe, where people are clamoring to get into it, because ultimately I do believe most of the jobs and the next industry trends are going to be in finding innovations in that area. And that will impact not just the beauty industry, but probably every industry that we can think of, which is so exciting.
That is very exciting. Last question. If you could travel back in time and talk to your younger self, you know, the one that was observing your mom with the red nails and go back to that time, is there anything that you would say to her about beauty or about life in general?
I think, yeah, kind of what I was saying earlier, like it's okay to fail. Don't be afraid to speak up. And don't be concerned about what others think, because in the end, it really doesn't matter. It's what you think about yourself, how you choose to be with others, and how you choose, I think, to also treat others. And that is something that I've learned a lot over the past couple decades, of which I think I'm actually just reaching like my full stride at the age of 45, and it took a long time to get there. So don't waste your time, people. Don't think it can happen later. Make it happen now, I would say, and don't be afraid to give something a try.
Yeah, life's short, right? Well, thank you so much for your time. I loved talking with you and just learning more about your story and your perspective. And it's been a wonderful chat. I really enjoyed it.
Thanks, Lance. I really appreciate the time too.
If you enjoyed this episode, we'd really appreciate it if you left a review on Apple Podcasts. Let us know what you liked, who you'd like to see on the show, and anything else you want to share. To keep up to date, subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere else you listen to your podcasts. Until next time, ask yourself, what's your mission?